Okay, we are on.
Call to order, regular meeting and public hearing in North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, February 13th, 2014, at City Hall. Got a pretty packed agenda tonight, guys. Minutes, January 23rd meeting. A motion?
Motion to approve.
Second. Any comments, questions, corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Public comment on non-agenda items. I do see we do have from the public, and just so you know, so if you're coming to comment on something on the agenda, that'll come later. But if you wish to speak now, Travis, you know the routine.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Travis Bridgman, 703 Ogle Avenue Northeast. Bolt, as some may know. I'm so thankful to be able to listen to this agenda on the recording. I value and love this place to come here and to listen and to participate. I was given this voucher by a pretty attractive crew of fly fishermen. So our fair city has recruited this fly fisherman conference of sorts to love being here. They think the North Fork somewhere off far away, and I'm training them to know the North Fork's right here, and we can fish and love and actually have like a little colony of fisher and women out there, so I gotta go back to there. But thank you for... Oh, they have a choice, or they say this little saying, which I just picked up on, but our life is about your choices as the Planning Commission. Our community's life's about your choices, so choose wisely. There's just for a disclaimer, is life is about choices, choose wisely. And it's just a poster, and I'm way off script because I'm pretty excited because they're attractive, and I'm smiley, and so are you. So I'm going to go back and recruit these fine citizens to our lovely community.
If we're smiling because we're dreaming, we're fly fishing right now.
Yeah.
Rocky, yes. I'm going to bring that to the, to the convention. Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome, Travis.
Thank you. Does anyone actually speak this time? Great. Okay. Item 4, public hearing, 2014-2015, comprehensive plan, amendments, and scope of work. I'm going to go through all of the formal parts of this, but we'll open the public hearing in a moment. Basically, just reminding the audience that this is the role of the Planning Commission is to make recommendations, advice to the council for further action. And there is, or should be, a sign-up sheet over there. Mike, is there a sign-up sheet
over
there?
Yeah, there is around the table over there.
And so if you would sign in, that would be helpful. We'll get a little overview from staff and then take comment from the public. So that will open the public hearing.
Okay. Well, apologies to the Planning Commission because you've heard this overview before, but it's an opportunity for the public to understand a little bit more about the process ahead and why we're doing this. So this is an update, major update to our city's comprehensive plan. So our comp plan is our guiding document. It's the city's long-range vision for the future of our city. And that vision guides all development in the city, all of our development regulations, our policies, our base on our comprehensive plan. So that comprehensive plan really needs to remain current to be effective and to reflect the values and goals of our city. And so that's the underlying purpose of why we're doing this. We are planning under the Washington State Growth Management Act, and that Growth Management Act has some core goals that the state has established that comprehensive plans need to comply with. We're focusing on reducing sprawl, ensuring affordable housing, protecting property rights, maintaining natural resources, protecting critical areas, ensuring concurrency, which means that development doesn't precede the services necessary to serve that development, and managing shorelines. Other than those four working core goals, there's a lot of flexibility for local jurisdictions to set their vision and set their goals for how they want to develop. And so there's a lot of opportunity for North Bend in steering our future with our comprehensive plan. There's a number of elements in our comprehensive plan that are mandatory under the Growth Management Act. There's a land use element that addresses housing and the distribution, or that addresses the distribution of various types of land uses. So housing, commercial uses, industrial uses, where those fit in the context of one another. There's a housing element that addresses housing affordability, diversity of housing, and making sure that you're meeting the needs of your diverse population with the various housing needs. An environment element that addresses environmental protection. Economic development element, the purpose of that's pretty self-evident. Transportation element to make sure that we have adequate planning for our roads to address our future population. Parks and recreation element, providing recreational opportunities for our citizens. Utilities element to plan for things like our sewers, our stormwater, power supply, various other public utilities. A capital facilities element that kind of ties all of your future improvements together and identifies how are you going to fund those improvements. And then finally, a shoreline element, addressing the planning along our rivers and streams. So the last time that we did a major update to our comprehensive plan was way back in 2007, and we're on an 8-year cycle under the Growth Management Act, so our deadline is coming up June 30th of 2015. So that sounds like a long ways out, but we have a lot of work to do to get there. It's very important that we do meet that timeline, because a lot of grants that are offered from the state are dependent on having a comprehensive plan that's consistent with state requirements. So to go a little bit more into what it is that we plan to amend, I've passed out a public or a scope of work document. What this does is it just identifies some of the primary objectives that we're going after. Again, consistency with the Growth Management Act being the biggest factor. And then just addressing out-of-date information, as well as items that the public has raised is important. The land use element, in particular, that will be our biggest update. So we'll have to address our employment targets, our residential growth targets from the state, and then the projected population growth over a 20-year period, and then identify that we have sufficient land within our residential and employment zones to accommodate those targets. Critical areas element, we anticipate that we're in pretty good shape. We did a major update like 6 or so years ago, I think, to our critical areas element in our critical area regulations, and those largely meet what's considered the best available science or the most current science on protecting critical areas. Housing element, we'll have to do a pretty major update based on our revised residential growth targets and growth forecasts. Transportation element, we feel like we're in fairly good shape. We did a major update to our transportation element 2 years ago, and the Puget Sound Regional Council has just recently certified our comp plan as consistent with transportation policy requirements under the Growth Management Act. So we don't anticipate diving deeply into the transportation element. We may address a few issues that are raised by the public, but otherwise not be spending much time on that one. Utilities element, we again feel like we're in good shape with regard to Growth Management Act requirements, and we'll just be updating the information from our utility providers, Puget Sound Energy, AT&T, et cetera, to update information on their services and utilities. Capital facilities element, we will have a major update to do. So that, again, ties all of your future improvements together. A lot of the elements of the comp plan have capital improvement plans. For instance, transportation lays out your 6-year plan for what projects you intend to do. The same with our parks element, the same with the stormwater capital facilities plan. And what the capital facilities element of the comp plan does is it takes all those and puts them together and says, here's the huge amount of projects that we want to do. Now, how are we going to pay for this? And so that's going to be a chunk of work to do that. And we do anticipate that we'll probably be seeking some outside assistance for that.
Awesome.
The natural resources element is something that we have in our comp plan currently that addresses adjacency to agricultural use. We are thinking that we'll probably want to wrap that into our land use element and just delete the natural resources element for trying to simplify the comp plan. That's one of our primary goals. And so throughout this whole process, is to look for ways to simplify and reduce, to kind of distill it to what's truly essential and get rid of kind of wordiness and anything that's not critical. Our parks element, we will have to come back to revisit for our park level service standards and our park needs based on our population projections. Finally, our economic development element. No major updates needed for that, but we will be updating it just to reflect current economic conditions and opportunities. The only other two elements are shoreline element and our energy and sustainability element. We don't anticipate any needed updates. So at the back of that scope of work document, you'll see a calendar for the Planning Commission review as well as Council review. The thing I primarily want to point out is our City Council, the next item that we have on here for the Planning Commission is a review of the City's vision statement. And that's something that we want to make sure that we invite the public to. That vision statement is the guiding statement that informs everything in the comprehensive plan. It's what is North Bend about, what are our primary objectives and goals, and what do we see ourselves as a community. And so we'll be coming back to that to look at, is the vision statement that was established in 2007 still reflective of our community goals? And if there's changes that we want to make to that, we should consider how any amendments to the rest of our comp plan reflect that vision statement. Also passed out a public participation plan. And this is simply from a requirement from the Washington State Growth Management Act that we identify to the public how we want to seek the involvement of the public in the update. So in this plan, we've just identified some key stakeholders that we'll be inviting, other government agencies, utility providers, business associations, environmental groups, and so forth, and as well as methods of informing the public and seeking public comment. The key thing out of this is probably the dedicated web page. We want to set up a page on the city's website that identifies the comp plan updates, the required elements, any current drafts, and in particular, an opportunity for comment. We hope that we can set up a specific comment section on that web page to be able to receive comments on the comp plan and be able to keep track of that as it comes. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to the public. Just a note to the Planning Commission, I passed out two comment letters that we received via email yesterday and today that were not in your packet. You also have two additional comment letters in your packet that were previously received.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, so public comment. So is there anyone here from the public wishing to speak on this item? Hearing, seeing none, we'll move on. Is there anything any of the commissioners wish to say at this time?
Question about one of the things that Mike mentioned in his opening statement. When you talk about growth targets that I'm not sure where they come from, who establishes them, and based on what criteria. Could you expand on that at all, exactly what we're supposed to grow to and why, and if we have those resources?
There's certain counties in the state that have additional planning requirements because we have a high population, King County being the key one. And so we're required to participate in the Buildable Lands Program, which establishes residential and employment growth targets so that we're balancing and accommodating the population growth regionally. That's in addition to population projections that are provided by the State Office of Financial Management that just says, within 20 years, we expect your population to be at such and such level. So the targets are in addition to that, and they say that city or zoning needs to provide sufficient land to accommodate so much residential growth and so much employment growth. So we need to make sure that based on our densities and our land uses, that we can accommodate those targets.
I'll take the same question, kind of different angle. So I've never understood, I got GMA as it relates to municipalities, counties, states. What's the connection between the state and the federal?
There's no federal requirement that we're planning under.
Well, let me ask it another way. Is there a connection between federal funds and state grants to a particular city?
Okay.
I think.
When you obtain a grant that has federal funds associated with it, there are parameters that you have to follow. Usually those are right now they've included the sustainable LID type of provisions in it. So it's typically the federal part is more of a process element. The state has the meat in it as to the standards that you have to include through GMA. That makes sense. So it's kind of like two-pronged. Feds really only deal with how we address the funds, where they go, how they get sorted out through the project. That's usually their role in it. Then usually it's kind of a state federal funding combo, and then the state has additional requirements typically that have more to do with the GMA aspects of.
Because we hear all the time about the state guidelines, you know, we want to get the GMA approved, so our adaptation to it, so that we're eligible for state funding.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been fascinated because I know the money's not truly just coming from the state.
The majority of the funds come through the state, if not from the state.
Okay, through. It's the same point I'm making. The origin of the money might be federal money. I'm just curious if anybody that's kind of, are we aware of that, or is it coming out of a state coffer that we don't know where the money comes in from?
Is there a particular concern you have with all that?
Yeah, I can give an example within parks. A lot of our park grants come from the State Recreation Conservation Office,
yep.
But they're getting some of their funds from the federal level, from Congress or from like the National Park Service, but administered by the state.
Okay.
But when there's federal funds involved, that's where there's other requirements with regard to how you do things. Like NEPA, all of a sudden, like when we did the park and reg, we didn't just have to do the SEPA, which is State Environmental Policy Act. We actually had to do NEPA, which is national, because there were federal funds. But it's more process-oriented versus what's in your comp plan. That's state.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll just put it out there. I may be a bizarre thinker on this, but I'm watching various municipalities go through this exercise, just reading about it, just generally, not in the meetings. And a lot of the guidelines that they're factoring when they created in the first place come from the federal level. And I don't know that the citizens of North Bend or the folks who live in the state of Washington realize how much of that plays into what we actually are doing. So
I wouldn't say that there's that much direction from the federal level in terms of our planning process.
I don't have a good example, so I apologize, I won't take another minute, but if there's money coming from the federal government feeding into the state, and the guidelines of the federal money say this must happen, then the state money can't come to us unless we've met the original guidelines. That's a huge control. It's there. And as we go into this next evolution, surprisingly, we said 2007, that would seem like yesterday. We're about to do it again. I swear we just sat down and did this.
Are you thinking that we need to keep this top of mind as we're going
absolutely
through each of our items?
Absolutely.
Just so that we have those baked in, should federal funds be associated to one of those?
Citizens of a small town should kind of keep it in the mix with some of the decisions that we're making as a small town actually come from out there.
Well, we're charting our own course. This is the North Bend Comprehensive Plan.
I brought this up because I'm not sure that's true.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't want to argue with it. I just want to put it out there now. I may bring it up again as we go along.
I just want to ask.
We're already going to have a long meeting. I'll shut up now.
I just want to ask one question on that. So if he's talking about grants for small towns, what is a small town? Do grants matter when you're talking about 6,000 people versus more than 10 or more thousand people? Are there any difference in grants and what we would be looking at? So when we're talking about our population projection from now, 10,000 is not going to be out of scope, I would guess. Or is it? I don't know what.
There's different thresholds based on the grant provider. I think 6,000 is.
It's five, actually. 5,000? Okay. We already crossed it, basically, once we annexed. We had a lot more opportunity as a small city before we brought in Tanner. But once we did that, we had it. Now we compete with all the big cities, even though we're one of the smallest.
Sure.
Great. Anything else? Okay, so we had an overview of what the comprehensive plan agenda is and a few comments around that. Mike, going forward, is there, I mean, we're working on various elements all along, so there's no further action needed as coming out of this public hearing, is that correct?
No.
And with that, we'll close the public hearing. And is there anything else we need to do on the overall comprehensive plan amendment scope of work before we move on to the next slide? Okay. Moving on, agenda item 5, Planning Commission review amendments to the LID street standards, North Bend Municipal Code 1905-020-I. And it notes that there is a hearing scheduled for our next meeting, February 27th. Who's got this potato?
That's me. Okay, just as a recap, I can't believe it's already been October, but in October, early October, the City Council's Economic Development Committee requested that we take this topic to the Planning Commission to evaluate adding a parking lane to the current residential local access street, specifically the low impact street. So prior to this amendment, or right now, the street width includes 2 9-foot lanes and a 7.5-foot parking lane. We took their recommendation, which was to simply add another parking lane, so a 7.5-foot wide parking lane, and remove mid-block bulb outs, which had a purpose prior to when we had parking on one side, and the purpose was to allow parking to undulate down the street. So their request was add a parking lane and take the mid-block bulb outs away, so delete those. We brought that to the Planning Commission on October 24th for consideration. You heard also from our Public Works Department that night, and they had interest in increasing that proposal in both lane width and parking lane width. So what you have in front of you today is somewhat of a compromise between the two. The 9-foot lane stayed as is. The parking lanes have been increased from the 7.5 to the 8-foot. The reason for that was just average width of mirror to mirror car. So that is where we ended up. The width of the right-of-way changes, basically, we did include, just because we opened up this chapter, we included some necessary edits that you saw also in your previous meeting, which set a minimum size for the biochannel, some different parameters for biochannel, and it was the minimum width is 11 feet, because now that we've built a few of these, we realize that's about a minimum that you can have the bottom of the channel, which we have now no less than 18 inches, and then the slide slopes at 3 to 1. Basically, that results and an 11-foot minimum biochannel. So we included those, that description, so developers will kind of know going in what our expectations are there. And then, again, since the biochannel can be utilized on both sides of the road, which would really create a wide right-of-way, but that's also dual function because now it's functioning as the stormwater system. Or it could be only utilized on one side of the road. We do also clarify that if the planter strip goes on one side, it is a 5-foot minimum on the other side. So that is what you have in front of you. The only change, however, to what was provided in October is the parking lanes going from 7.5 to 8. Otherwise, everything is as you saw it, provided by the planning department.
But in regard to what it is now, it's adding?
It's adding, it's adding 8-foot parking, right, plus a half a foot on the other side of the road for that extra parking width. So 8.5 additional width.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of cars were used to determine the average?
It was a mix of it was a mix the Public Works Department had provided it in that packet, and they had everything from a smaller car to trucks.
I took some pictures.
Yeah.
Before we go, let me ask if any of the folks in the public are wanting to make any comment about this standard.
I don't understand what street we're talking about, but that's not.
The street we're talking about, yeah.
It's not a particular street. Okay. It's a standard for a particular type of building.
Oh, okay.
For future streets.
It's future streets.
But not changing any current streets?
Correct.
Okay.
It's new streets.
So, Janet, the last thing that you said, something about, you were saying it added X, like, instead of 7.5 foot wide, it's 8 foot wide, which is a total gain of...
We added a parking lane of 8 feet, so that's new. That's all new. And then we upped the other parking lane from the 7.5 to the 8 foot width. So 8.5 total new width.
And is a requirement for both sides of the street parking or one side?
This would require parking on both sides of the street. And we did, to kind of hope clarify that for not only just the citizens that read the code, but developers, is we did try to draft that out and clear where you see the 9-foot lane, 9-foot lane, parking lane, and the right-of-way width. So, and then I know that you had asked for additional information, which I think we discussed last week.
Briefly at the last meeting.
Yeah.
Right. We noted that.
Jim?
I missed the last meeting. If this was covered, just look at me funny.
We do that all the time. that was too easy.
So the parking concept. If I remember right, we tied all this back, I know you did, to the density and setbacks between houses, setbacks between backyards, that whole dance. Now we're talking about the street segment of that. And if you're going to allow parking on both sides of any street, everybody's going to have a car, theoretically, parked in front of their house.
Potentially they could, yes. Maybe.
So is this a discussion that could go backwards to say, we're developing neighborhoods now, they're going to have parking in front of their houses as opposed to parking in their garages or the driveways?
The requirement for off-street parking stays the same. Our code requires 2 off-street parking spaces per unit. So that doesn't change. This is just a matter of how much is available on the street.
You are adding parking to your neighborhoods.
Yes. So the developer who's coming into that land that we're going to designate for this function is going to say, I'm going to put in, single driveways for one car to one car garages because I can sell more of those than I can with double width and a sidewalk and me with this thought I'm trying to come up with.
You're saying this.
If you create the space on the street.
Issaquah condos.
Well, the question.
Thank you. She just said we're creating that opportunity.
No, what we all other provisions of our code remain solid. So right now we require for single family two garage spaces, and we actually require a 20-foot driveway. So we
wide.
Length.
Long.
So you on site you have two garage spaces and two driveway spaces.
Right.
If you wanted to park four cars, you could.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that's not being changed by this, right? So we're continuing to require effectively four parking spaces on lot, and we're doubling the on-street parking.
Why?
This was a request of our council committee to bring to you. They felt that there was, they felt the roads were narrow, and they felt that there was a lack of on-street parking.
Did we just go to, if Bill wants parking in the street, did we just go to a 18 feet wide street?
Well,
it's 34.
Yeah, okay.
So it's, or following the way the previous was written, it counted the curb as well. It comes out to be 35. I'm not really quite sure why we count curb and pave, but when I added it up, I get this proposal as being 35 feet pavement, now 61 foot minimum right of way, which both of which are larger than, well, the 61 foot right of way is now larger than any other neighborhood.
So what I just would say to that is, if this continues, and I understand we're kind of discussing it. Maybe not, because city council says send it down and let them approve it. I think that's what I heard.
Well, could I? Maybe let me give a little history and help Jen out here as well, because I sat in on several of the council committee meetings that were where this was discussed, and as she's expressing, there's several on the committee that just have felt, and it's in reaction to the Cedar Falls development, that it feels too narrow in there, and that they felt that that parking was not adequate. And so there's a couple different things at work there. One is just overall parking, but then is the idea of the 7.5-foot parking lane, and with the 9-foot travel lane, that giving it a little bit too narrow. And so yes, there are some on council who just feel that we really need to add a second parking lane.
Or wider street. I believe I've heard wider street and, oh, by the way, more parking.
Well, the predominant request is add a parking lane.
Okay.
And I think it'd be fair to say that
the council committee only requested the 7.5-foot lane to be added.
It's staff in their consultations having looked at and felt that perhaps the 7.5-foot parking might be a little narrow.
And we, the planning department, came forth with the council committee's request at 7.5. In response to Public Works' request for larger lanes and parking widths, this is what has come to you. Right. The 7.5 was the original staff and CED council committee proposal.
So the parking piece, I get that you need some parking on the street. And maybe it's not designated blocked parking, but there's a wide enough street that people can park occasionally, whatever. The only energy I have about this is I know from the land use concept, if you open the street, make it wider, there is a place where you exponentially increase the cost of the house that the street serves. Because you're just taking land away.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's infrastructure, moving water around, or planting beds, or whatever, it's expensive to create a place in front of, quote, a stranger's house to park a car. That's weird to me. I get the wider streets, it's safer. You can see what's going on. to the point where people do 50 to 30.
Actually, that's the dilemma with wider. It gets faster.
Instead of making a straight street, you make a meandering street. That's the fix for that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay. We could go on. Maybe that's the point. Maybe we should go on. I'm having a hard time with this idea that we just widen the streets for parking. That's bizarre in a neighborhood to me.
So on that note, when they're talking about making another lane, is there any thought, since it's residential, making that a bike lane or pedestrian paths instead of just all parking consistently?
No, that did not come up. Typically on residential streets, just because the speed of those streets are 25, they do meander and they have lots of driveways. You usually don't put bike lanes on those. You would save those for collectors and arterials.
And then as far as pedestrian pathways, we do still have the requirement for a sidewalk on both sides of the street.
Yeah.
I was just driving in Cedar Falls, and the little kid riding a bike was pretty dangerous on the street, so that's why I asked.
Yeah.
So they become better bike.
Boy, we're a thicker helmet there.
Jeez.
So, you know, I had conversation with council. I also had a long conversation with city administrator, and you know, the council does want to take some action in this regard. And I think, from my perspective, you know, the best that we can do is to give them our best advice and let them take the action that they do. And so, the main I guess my main request of us is that we do need to have public hearing at our next meeting, and I just want to be sure that we make a recommendation coming out of that public hearing. Beyond that, most of what I'll say for the rest of the evening is just my views of it, and I'm definitely still struggling with it. So
I'll say, just from my piece, if I look at what a Tahoe is and know that so many people have them in our town, and if you're talking mirror-to-mirror, 7.9 and 8-foot parking, you know, makes a lot of sense unless you fold your mirrors in. When I look at our fire trucks, well, it says the tanker truck is 9.3 with its mirrors. The mirrors sit up higher than most vehicles, and so that's not a great measurement. But what I did research on is when they put their ladders up, they have to put out some supports.
Yep.
And that's going to make them 9 feet wide. So where I'm thinking 9-foot lengths is a minimum, 10-foot would be nicer. I'm not so certain on double-sided parking.
I'll throw in the parking piece. If we're widening, we have flat land here for these neighborhoods that have been developed. If we're widening the street for the purpose of on-street parking, not only did you take away from developable land, as I mentioned earlier, increase the cost of that single family or whatever structure's there, but you also, I think, exponentially increase the hazard of that street for any pedestrian, child or otherwise, no matter how thick their helmet is, to be on that street, because now they're going to be walking between bumpers and whatever the road traffic speed is. Far better, as an alternative, is some kind of meandering streetscape that adds aesthetics, that adds safety, because the speed is slower and you're not trying to force a small structure on the land used by multiple drivers. Because I think that's the trend. But if you increase the cost of the smaller building, you're going to have more people trying to pay for it, more drivers. Even if it's just two parents working and driving the cars, you're going to have to. It's the wrong direction of putting. Anyway, back to the planning concept. You're creating the wrong idea by just widening the streets and calling it parking. It's not the way it's going to be.
How does this impact some of the requests that are currently in to build that would?
It does
they're
not.
All right. Impacted by it.
Anything
right.
That is vested, which means they have a complete application submitted, this will not affect. This would only affect any future developments that haven't submitted their complete application.
Of the actions currently underway, what would be the first one that does not have a complete application this might apply? Sigali?
No, they have complete.
Does. I think everything you guys are aware of so is complete.
So everything's complete.
The only
at this
ones
point.
That are in, that aren't, we have nothing in our office that has been submitted and has not been deemed complete.
This morning.
Okay.
Something new.
This morning we have one. Otherwise, okay. Everything.
So everything else is complete.
So. But there's many that are like in the next month. Yeah. You know, there's stuff brewing. I mean, I'll be honest. We are every day we're talking with developers about more annexations, more development. I mean, North Bend's moving right now.
There's a lot coming out.
Yeah.
It just feels weird to have like so. We have Tannerwood as an example, because I'm assuming they would not. This would not pass in Tannerwood. I don't think their streets are that wide.
Mm-hmm.
Tannerwood's were wider.
Some of the reaction to Tannerwood was actually how we got to the Cedar Falls. And now they're feeling that the Cedar Falls took it too far and want to back off.
Those are the really right? little streets, yeah.
Well, the point is, if you look at the chart,
they're not so little.
They're not. It's mostly visual impression.
I think what makes Cedar Falls feel smaller, which also slows traffic too, which makes it safer, is somewhat of the mid-block bulbouts. When you have the bulbouts at the intersection, this necking feeling definitely slows cars, and it shortens the distance you have a pedestrian in the traffic.
The setback isn't as far, it seems, either, and it also makes it a little more close in. Is what I felt.
Well, I'll say I agree with you that the bulbouts make it that feel. Mm-hmm. In addition to that,
you're right.
Those are curved linear roads,
yep.
which
you're
gives
right.
you that feeling. The lots are narrower, therefore the houses appear larger on them. That gives you that feeling.
Yeah.
The way the LID is done in there makes it feel a little tighter because mm-hmm. the plantings are larger.
Mm. That's a good point, right? Yeah.
Everything in that subdivision gives the impression of tighter, smaller, even though the reality of the tape measure is something closer to equal.
So what's the problem that we're trying to solve?
Well, the problem that you're okay. If you don't have necessarily a problem, what you have is you had a council committee that came to staff and said, you know, we feel we need the additional parking lane. They did prefer the approach that Tannerwood had, which has the parking on both sides. So we brought that request to you. Your job as a planning commission is to consider it and make a recommendation, like Rob indicated. So
to continue the conversation, I hope we're not expected to give some final recommendation tonight.
Not tonight. We have a public hearing next week. So this is discussion.
I'll just restate maybe five different ways before we're done. Wider streets, cool. And I'm not a traffic. We lost our traffic guy.
We need our traffic guy.
Yeah. Scott better be healthy next round.
There's some technical jargon I'm sure that talks about the human visual effect mm-hmm. of what's ahead of me is going to dictate my comfort and my school.
If
I can see a mile ahead, I'm doing 110. If I can see 10 feet, I'm doing 5 miles an hour. So when we talk about widening the streets, that's fine, as long as it doesn't become a thoroughfare because people can see to the end of it. So you fix that, in my opinion, by doing a meander, you do a turnabout, a squeeze, and you call the bulb out, whatever that is, where you have some setbacks that are altered but in the houses along the way, so there's not this sense of I have a clear path to my destination, which I travel 3 times every day. Very, very comfortable. I didn't recognize the guy on the yellow bicycle because he's only been there once. That's a huge deal in a neighborhood. For people buying it, for developers planning it, it impacts the value of what they do. So it's kind of like if we let the streets go wider based on what we interpret city council members have said, I'm not sure they're thinking that part of it through, and maybe that's the point I'm making here, is we need to.
So based on what you're saying on the argument for going too wide, I'll just say where we are right now with 7.5 feet, I think, is way too narrow, being that most vehicles are beyond that scope, and I do think we need to increase the width, but, you know, we don't want to go too far.
I agree. Unless it's a one-way street.
Unless it's a one-way street, that's a good way to solve what we currently have. Mm-hmm. But to not do anything, I think, would be a safety risk. As I hear about in some areas of Issaquah, where actually you can't get a fire truck down and they have to run hoses to get to those structures. So.
But I think our base doesn't cause that. Like the way it's documented today, we don't have that issue. We wouldn't have that issue, right?
There's different. Issaquah Highlands is very, very dense. You have nothing because you go. Issaquah Highlands not only has narrower streets, they have much more. 4 dwelling units per acre is not a very dense, even though it feels dense.
Right. What I'm saying is that the standards as they are today allows a fire truck to go down there. Granted, they're going to take both lanes because it's a fire.
Eastside Fire and Rescue reviews any amendments to streets.
Right.
And when we did the previous amendments to create the LID street standard, they reviewed and approved that.
I get giving a little extra is great, not that we've presented a safety issue the way it is today.
It is not a safety issue the way it is today. Could you provide wider, more free-flowing?
Yes.
Always. I mean, that is, I think, the question you're being asked. Is it, you know, at what point are you comfortable and what point you're not?
Brendan.
No.
So I've struggled with this one a lot. As I've already indicated, I had a lot of conversations around it. I can't get past some of, a little bit of it's philosophical and a little bit of it is the facts I see in front of me. From a philosophical standpoint, and again, I did the math today, and when I added up and I went 61-foot right-of-way, 35, 30-some foot of pavement, and we're continuing to require 20-foot wide pad on lot for an additional 2 cars, it's no longer LID to me. I don't see anything there that says, gee, we're reducing the amount of impervious service. We might as well just throw it out. That's kind of, and it's an overreaction, but it's a little bit of my gut of saying, I don't know. You know, what's the difference from our regular standard?
But the sidewalk's impervious, Rob.
Yeah, no. So that's part of it. Again, there's a couple of things in the design. So I threw up on the board here and so for the recording. When we look at the way that the bulb outs work to neck out the entrance into the paved surface. So what that street's supposed to be is parking on one side and 2 travel lanes. So if you look at the way the bulb out works, you have to go around what is effectively the travel lane and then jog back. Right? And I certainly haven't drawn it to scale, but it's, you know, they're not a direct path.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, visually, the bulb out tells me this is a place to park. And mm-hmm. So when I drive through Cedar Falls frequently and I see the occasional car parked on the wrong side, frequently under the no parking sign, it's either just choosing to ignore, of course, or they're just reading the visual cue, right? And we have the complication that because we also have the mid-block bulb outs, I get, when I drive through there, even when the place is almost deserted, I get the impression that both sides would be parking mm-hmm. because there's concrete to concrete.
The original design was that both sides would be parked. And the bulb out would indicate if there was a bulb out, you could park on the other side, but you couldn't park where the bulb out was because it blocked the parking area.
Obvious.
So what happened when that development occurred was our engineering was a little concerned with not having parking, no parking signs. So no parking signs went up, which kind of nullified the reason for the mid-block bulb outs. So the mid-block bulb outs became obsolete from a function standpoint when those stop signs or those no parking signs went up. One clarification I want to make sure I understand. If this is an intersection, this would be like this. So you would have 2 9-foot lanes in the bulb out.
Yeah.
And then this would be sidewalk. So these lanes would be in the nines, and then you'd have your 8 and 8. That's how it would be.
Well, no, but I'm not trying to draw what you're proposing. I'm drawing what's existing, and this isn't here. You've got
right,
two travel lanes and a parking lane.
So what you have right now is a 7.599, and then this is, right.
Yeah, but it's not. So I'm saying visually, it does not go straight through. There's a bulb out on each side.
That's true. It isn't quite like this. But
right. So I.
But at the intersections, you have 18 feet.
You guys have scale issues.
Yeah, we have scale issues. So that's one, you know, and staff's proposed to eliminate the mid-blocks. So that
mid-blocks once the parking sign went up.
And as I say, whether this is perfectly drawn or not, my impression is it necks and widens, right?
It
your neck down and it widens on both sides. That gives me a visual cue that I'm parking either side or that I've got to veer to the right to be in the true travel lane. Is all I'm saying. But beyond that, again, when we add up all that extra parking lane and all of that, we're now at 50 feet a minimum in pavement, plus the 11 feet, a 61-foot right-of-way, larger right-of-way than our other neighborhoods, whether it's Sideview Estates or LaForest Homes or any of the others where you can drive through and you feel like you're on a runway. And most of those neighborhoods aren't curved, I'll grant you, but I'm talking right-of-way there. And when I look back through it, my gut just keeps coming back to about 28 feet of pavement seems to be the right amount of pavement width. That gives you all the play for travel lanes and parking that there seems to need to be. And so I fully support widening up the parking lane width if there was any feel that in addition to that we needed a little wider travel lane. I could even possibly get that far. But I don't think we have a parking shortage. And so I really struggle with the notion of adding a parking lane. So that's probably not the last, but I'm going to try and look at the last thing I say on it.
At 28 feet, nicely, it would be 2 10-foot lanes and 1 8-foot parkings.
It's lane 9, 9, 8 in the curve, right?
That's 28 feet.
If you measure the curve.
So this just kind of showed up, and I'm thinking to myself, if I needed to increase the lane width, that's what's being asked. The balance to me is I'm going to have parking on one side, the sidewalk on the other side. So that any pedestrian leaving the sidewalk going across the street is going to have a bare street to walk into. Not between cars, ever. They'd have to leave grass to go in between the car. To me, that's a safety piece. And if you throw in some kind of meander that prevents...
Well, if you have houses on both sides of the street, you can sidewalks.
One side of the street gets a parking area on their side.
We're proposing sidewalks on both sides.
Yeah.
Well, and the mix of cars and pedestrians, everybody would probably agree, that never mixes well. And again, you've got to walk down the sidewalk to your car. But if this neighborhood that we are imagining has 2 parking spaces in the garage and 2 parking spaces outside the garage, the only time that the street parking is going to be full is there's some kind of event. Another alternative that I would throw in, you may agree, as you drive around, tendencies are, when a neighborhood reaches the 7 to 10 year age, the it starts to convert to rentals, and you end up with a lot more cars.
You also end up with more team drivers and more cars.
You can, but to your, I'm sorry if I could just, because a particular point that you're making about, you know, the party or whatever is so, we did some calculations, and parking, again, going back, you know, the driver here is the feeling of Cedar Falls. And I, you know, did a calculation that said there's a minimum of 5 parking place spaces per house in Cedar Falls. And that's saying that there's 2 on-street parking in front of a lot, but you're parking one side, so you split it, right? 1 car for each house. So you at least can park 5 cars per home. I have just convinced that most of the impression that the neighborhood is given has been during the heavy construction, when there are, you know, literally probably 100 construction vehicles also present in the neighborhood, you know, while lots and homes are being built. And as that has dissipated with both the winter and that it's nearly built out, the frequency of seeing very many cars parked on the street is virtually not there. And so I just feel that we're trying to address something that doesn't really exist in regard to this too little parking.
Now I'm going to ask my question, which kind of piles on here, that I asked earlier in a different way. So if we made this change, there's not very many developable pieces of property left, right?
There is. No,
it's
yeah,
there's going to be. Look at all the stuff outside
okay,
the UGA.
So there's tons. That right, the answers
second,
my question.
It's there.
It's like, so how, I mean, so there's neighborhoods in process already, ones that are permits are in, and then the remaining ones, this is only going to impact them. So, I mean, are we solving a problem that is so minuscule that it's not even going to matter?
At least the bigger developable sites are the ones that are in right now.
No, there's a potential another 100. But either way, there's going to be new roads.
Well, let's say acreage-wise, my gut would say we probably have at least as much acreage still in the UGA in low-density residential zoning as
there's
we currently have already in process. So it's still a lot of potential.
So it's still
neighborhoods.
Pretty applicable.
And I would even go so far as to say it's probably applicable, perhaps, depending on how it shakes out. There are some folks who are vested already who might say, ooh, this is a nice change. Regroup and start over. So, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's not saying that they can't.
Anything can happen with what's existing now, the economics, whatever. We set
this
up. They're
not being forced to do this at all. It's still choice.
Yeah. Right.
This standard is choice, and I guess that's important for us to recall.
It's choice.
It's choice, and all current developments have chosen to apply the LID standard.
So I can still build this kind of a road.
You can
I mean, the current standard versus the non-LID.
Okay. I'll overlay that thought. This is going out over time, going out over multiple times in the economy. And I just went through a neighborhood in Mill Creek. People think of Mill Creek and it's a positive. Hey, they did a good job. But this particular neighborhood, and then people look it up, the name, had designed streets such that there was no parking. It was a meandering street through the neighborhood, zero lot line. All you saw was a tiny little front porch and a big two-car garage. And there were people who tried to park on the street. They kind of parked up in front of the house. You had to walk and go around them. They had visitor parking, but the visitor parking was never close to probably where you wanted to go because it was kind of centered out away from the building area. And it was miserable. It looked like not what I'm sure the people who originally bought the homes thought they were buying. But it was because the developer said, hey, this is a concept I can do here, let's go. Mm-hmm. Boom. He built to the market, the price point sold, and it went through. Now it's done for how many tens of years? So that's why I spent time on this, because if we start talking about options of how to build streets, the market's going to come, and we're going to have a neighborhood that fits that. And if the price point value of what's selling is going to be small, tiny little houses, you know, barely meet the minimums, and we've got parking on the street for anybody who else wants to come, you know, all of a sudden we create a neighborhood maybe we didn't think about.
I think Rob made a good point, is you have four dwellings per acre, and right now you have two garage spaces, two driveway spaces, and basically on average about one space, because you have parking on one side, even if it was supposed to be undulate through the neighborhood. If you add a parking lane, you're basically going from five parking spaces per dwelling to about six, as a rough estimate. So the question I think you're asking, right now you're at five, you're going to six, you're adding 7.5, or yeah,
eight.
width to the paved way. But things like what you're describing wouldn't happen here because of all our other design standards. And, you know, we do require connectivity through neighborhoods, so we don't get that cul-de-sac kind of go-nowhere type of feel. And we did actually work with Cedar Falls to create those more meandering roads. Doesn't mean grid pattern doesn't work just as well. It's usually based on block width. So, you know, there is a sense of establish the standards, but you can't predict every possible scenario. It never happens in planning. You do your best to establish the baseline, and then you implement and you work with developers as they come in to create the best plan for the city. So, that you know, yeah, but I think the rest of your code is pretty careful to combat those issues.
Yeah.
So my question is, given this is low-impact development, is there any way to change what the paving course is? Or are there any different things that we can do to increase the drainage where you're talking about so much pavement width?
Well, I think that the problem with that is a lot of those pervious paving are still super expensive. They're expensive to maintain. They're potentially very difficult in floodplain areas, even though we haven't seen a lot of flooding, and this area is not that. So far, you know, Issaquah's had some really bad history with the one or two that they've implemented. So I can't say I'd recommend that as a solution.
They figured it out, but it was a rough implementation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't see them just getting implemented.
Right.
Citywide to this day. I think there's still some work to be had on that. The question more is how much paving is really necessary.
So the street width piece, what do you recall when it converted to parking?
Sorry?
I remember long discussions over city council. They were always interested in the width, or concerned about the width of the street. To me, it's two different discussions, the width of the street or the addition or allocation.
You mean the width of the lane?
Yeah. I mean, I get the paved piece impact, but and I would say yes to the width of the street. Good idea. Fighting on the parking piece.
Well, I guess that's where essentially my comment about the 28 feet went. You know, we don't want stripe neighborhoods, right? And so how do I know I'm in 9 foot or a 10 foot travel lane? I don't know if I'm in a 7.5 foot wide parking lane or an 8 foot wide parking lane, but it's curb to curb is what matters in my mind. So it's what feels comfortable, and you have, you know, we need to segment it out in our heads to say, yeah, that feels like enough width. And
so I guess I'm still struggling. City Council is proposing, hey, I've heard wider streets, but have I heard from them street parking? Or is that some kind of balance to say?
Well, again, the specific ask of the council committee was to add specifically, I guess it was 7.5 foot, but they wanted to add a second parking lane. Right. So they wanted, they wanted parking on both sides. Wanted parking both sides. So it wasn't about what's the width, although I guess the recommendation was they were comfortable with the 7.5, 7.5, 9.9, right? So that was the ask out of council. And again, I don't want to oversell it. I'm not saying even that that's necessarily an unreasonable ask or to look at. I'm just, when I look at it philosophically and when I look at the facts in the neighborhood, I'm not seeing the need for the other parking lane. I am seeing and understand the need for a little bit more width then.
Is there a way at the public hearing that we can have large pictures or slideshows of some of these examples, especially of the ones that the new standard that we're trying to consider here? With an 8-foot, 8-foot or some mock-up that, because I can sit here and conceptualize it, but just because I'm sitting here thinking about it and driving around the neighborhood and it's top of mind, but for somebody coming in, how are they going to make it relevant? How can we make it relevant to them to understand what the new standard is, apart from just the math that's laid out on the map?
Anybody coming in to design a road is going to understand.
But I mean, when we go, when we have a public hearing,
we can certainly bring a picture of some falls. And
I would recommend that if we could, to do the different things, such as the issue that was brought up over here, and then the issue or with where we'd like to go, so we could see that juxtaposition, so that people can have a frame of reference. You mentioned something earlier about Issaquah. So now I'm going through all my, this is my neighborhood's trying to remember what we're talking about, but something visual may help the dialogue. Yeah.
And I'd love, I hope.
Because before I was all for the wider two lane thing, and then to your point about adding more concrete, I'm thinking, oh, concrete jungle, that's not good. So now I'm.
How does that fit with our vision that's coming?
Well, I just hope we get some, well, yes, good point. I hope we get some citizens, and I particularly would love to hear from some in Cedar Falls.
And that's exactly it, because I'm looking at it now. If I'm a homeowner, I may want that extra parking on the street.
Yeah.
That may be a value to me. And I've lived in neighborhoods where it didn't exist, like the one you just mapped out, and it was horrible. Then I've lived in some where it seemed like there was an abundant, you know, you really need all this parking. But I can see it being a legitimate issue for folks, too. So not just the developer, but the homeowner is trying to find it.
Okay, well, we'll put some visuals together. What we'll bring back to you is some visuals of the current road and some visuals, if we can find a road,
something
that is pretty much what we're proposing. Where we won't find it, I can guarantee you, the reason why this is still LID is because we're allowing the stormwater to be treated within the roadway. Otherwise, what's happened in the past, you've seen the pipe to the pond in the corner of the development. Yeah. So that is also why you have a 61-foot right-of-way. So when I look at this roadway, that's really wide, but they also aren't losing a big corner of their development to a stormwater pump.
Right.
So you keep that in mind. So really what we're looking at is the additional pavement. Yeah, so what we'll try to do is find you an example. The closest one I can think of is Tannerwood. Problem is, when you look at that visually, it doesn't, it's
right.
Not what you're proving. So that's my only reluctance to do this, is to say, you know, I mean, in the end, visualize Cedar Falls with 8 extra feet.
We could get 5 of that extra feet back by doing sidewalk one side.
You can, if that's
it. Didn't I say something about the early route?
Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out how that would work with
us. I just wanted to see if she jumped. I'm trying to get her to jump.
No, I've learned.
And I would even go so far as to say 2 different widths of sidewalks.
Ooh.
Oh.
just really.
One side gets parking and a single access, enough for. What is the minimum standard sidewalk? I got to believe it has something in a wheelchair.
3 feet.
Yeah, but the standard now is 5/6. Everybody wants wider. Double strollers. Yeah. Double cities.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that we're about to deteriorate.
No, I'll just say this. So I did go out to Cedar Falls in the rain, and I measured the street width without getting hit, and I was surprised, and maybe to the curbs, but 30 feet didn't look 30 feet. So I was just... perception is...
Did you have a tape with you?
Perception is reality. That's
did you lay that tape across the table and stand back to be sure that it felt that way?
I laid it from curb to curb.
Okay.
Curb to curb.
I think we're moving on.
We are moving on.
Thank you.
And we're ahead of schedule. This is not agenda item number 6, introduction, amendments to residential design standards, North Bend Municipal Code 1834. Who's got this one, Megan?
I know. Well, Jenna is going to pipe in a little bit on the cottage aspect of it, but essentially what you see here, this is just an introduction. So I know there's a lot of... a lot of red line edits in here that might look a little bit scary, but it's basically your design standards on a diet. So really a lot of what we've done is taken away superfluous language that's unnecessary. And then if anything was duplicated, we removed that to make it less confusing. And we've reformatted it so it's a little bit more simpler for the developer coming in wanting to... just look at single family and cottage or multifamily. They can just go straight to it without reading single family at the same time. So what we can do is, instead of going through it line by line by line, because there's 34 pages here, we'll go through it page by page, and I'll try to summarize it, and then we'll point out the big items we need to go through.
This is your real introduction to Jim and I helping you. Would you like our edits as we go?
Yeah. I think that edits as we go would be good. Okay.
Help me first find where you are.
Okay, so we're looking at our red line.
Have that a second ago, and then also we
keep going.
Just a few pages. There you go.
That's one thing we need to do.
There you are.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Yes. Thank you. The whispered comment was we need the page numbers on everything.
It's difficult, but we
page one.
We'll try. Okay. So as far as the outline of the sections go, preamble, 0.005 through 0.040 stay the same. And then from there we go to single family and cottage residential. Then we move on to 0.060 multifamily residential. And then we'll jump down to historic buildings, residential related uses, and then that's where we end essentially. So that's what we'll start with. Our preamble, we jump down, we've taken out all this language here is just sort of superfluous. We just felt like we didn't need it.
So on the preamble, when I read it, as the North Bend vision, that entry statement reads, gives the assumption that it's a continuing statement, right?
Right.
As the North Bend vision, then I make this statement, and then I continue the sentence. Mm-hmm. And with the way that you've cut out the next information, I think you inadvertently eliminates that. So maybe you should look at also taking out as, capitalized T, the North Bend Vision Plan states.
Okay.
Right? And maybe then you're just footnoting that it's North Bend Vision Plan 1992. And then one other question is that Mike, in the earlier conversation tonight, referred to a vision plan of 2007. So it sounds like we've got either two vision plans or a revised vision plan.
Well, let me clarify that. What you have is a comp plan that was updated in 2002, or 7, sorry. And what this is a really old vision plan from 1992 that was done, and we did not take this out. It's a good question of whether.
Well, the question is the 2007 was that vision plan intended to be an update to 92,
Or was it a separate thing altogether that was being
offered? 92 was an actual vision plan, and the 2007 is the comp plan amendment. The vision,
there's a vision statement as well. That actually, it may be just in that 1992. That sounds really old, though.
So you may need to look at it and see just what is the vision plan.
And we at least we're aware of the vision plan and what it is and what have you. But the question, I would actually prefer either we state a vision plan was done in 92 and stated X, or that's pretty old.
We might just need to take it out.
Okay. Yeah, because
I'm with you.
The thing I was bugged about is it's like all warm and fuzzy. It's a beautiful setting, an emerging economic base, and concerned citizens.
Yep, strength. Well,
were we concerned? Yeah. Do I need to? Then I got scared, and I was like,
"Well, I'm not afraid." Yeah. For the record, I'm not afraid of 92, but I just, if that is still the city's vision.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We'll bring something back. We'll redo this.
Yeah.
All right. See, sorry, page 2.
And that is one of your upcoming agenda items.
Who was here in 1992?
Not anybody here.
Stay somewhat more formal.
Yeah. I think I drove through for a concert or something.
You don't know.
No.
Can we need a printable?
Page 2, Megan, moving it on.
Yep.
There's a resolution 639 reference there. If that's still pertinent, I'd like that to be provided to us. I'd love to read that.
Resolution 639.
If that still has some
in
impact on our vision.
Yeah, we already stated it. So that's everything under the purpose section is already been stated in the preamble 639.
No, he's talking about right here.
Oh.
You know what I'd actually like to do just is say, for now, let's not worry about the preamble because I think we could probably shrink it down and have it really concise and really almost just. Since we have the section open, we'll just.
You can cut out a whole lot of design. There's about 30 occurrences of the word design in that paragraph.
We will rewrite. Okay. Great comment.
Good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Properly placed ellipses.
Editing?
Okay, so we're
jumping down, everybody, down to under 30, purpose and organization. Purpose, we removed because we stated in the preamble, so we'll just need to make sure that that maintains the same.
Yeah.
So we'll make sure.
I get where you're going. How about the linking up? Though that their comp plan, how the pieces relate, does that still need to be mentioned here somehow? It's just a question, not a suggestion.
In the
purpose that was cut out, I just caught there was in the on page 3 there was a in the first paragraph there was a reference to the comp plan,
and
it just. In related documents and just set off the light bulb, you walked us through the last time how the various GMA relates to comp plan, relates to code, and I'm thinking, well, is this a place that needs that or not? Just occurred in my head, just something to think about.
Yeah, we probably will want to refer maybe in a revised preamble to the policies in the comp plan and direct design.
Or just, I think what he's saying is make sure it is important to link the documents, and that purpose section did. And I think we could rewrite the preamble and the purpose.
That's kind of what I thought the purpose was trying to do, was to give you the context of how does this fit.
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Okay. All right, moving on. Page 4?
Page 3.
Page 3, okay. Isn't that where we just were?
So I guess it's revised A3. It says ensure that design matters are considered comprehensively and not in isolation. But in the preamble on page 2, your first sentence includes the word gated subdivisions. So I don't know if that is in conflict with not in isolation. So the first sentence on page 2, one option is a suburb with the gated subdivisions. Does that
mean the continuity or connectivity part
is a problem?
As opposed to the...
Well, I read that first piece as you can have A or B, and this document favors B. therefore not gated communities.
Right.
Yeah, that's how I read it, too.
So, that's a question. Can
Gary, where are you looking for the...
We're on page three, right here.
Gated subdivision.
That's the very start.
Page two, the first sentence on the top. Okay. One option is the suburb.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. It's on page two.
So I have a question on the gated concept. Can that even happen in the city limits?
Would you not have the public street?
So they'd have to buy the street.
Not the public street.
If you buy the street, then you can gate it if you want.
Yeah.
We allow private streets up to a certain number of homes. I think four.
Four, yeah.
So you could put a gate on that.
So let me ask you, like, the forced homes, if they bought their street in there, they could gate that, right?
We wouldn't, in theory, our code says, yeah, if the code would allow it, yes. They could, any private road, in theory, could be gated.
Well, what was the four piece? Help me out with that.
We don't allow private streets over, for serving over four homes.
So the forest
private driveway.
That's a public street. No, I'm still confused. Private streets can gate themselves.
Right.
Regardless of how many units.
Yeah. Well, you can't, no new private streets are allowed for five homes or more.
Okay. And something like a forest who says retroactively they'd like to gate, that's a problem?
Yes, because it's on a public street.
So they'd have to privatize the street somehow.
Which would not
buy it from the city, which the city wouldn't sell.
You'd have to vacate the road and sell it.
Yeah, so we're talking four houses.
This is probably never going to, yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking theoretically about LaForest.
Sorry, thank you, Gary.
Moving on.
I have something else on number three on that one.
Okay.
So not in isolation, on applicable development projects. So shouldn't it just be on all development projects? Applicable just seems like it's a comprehensive.
Yeah. This one's good, this one doesn't.
Sorry.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Aren't there some exclusions later that might bring up why the word applicable is being used? I'm not sure.
Applicable would be, like a short plot. It's not necessarily applicable. Or one, this won't apply to one multifamily structure. So the word applicable doesn't hurt because we only apply it when it is triggered.
Applicable.
Yeah. So I will.
Great.
Okay.
Which shade of purple is it?
Mr. Next one. Do you have another one on that page?
No.
So that's okay. Just curious for number six.
Mm-hmm.
Foster proactive, positive, proper relationships, city staff, officials, la la la. So what are we currently doing there to foster that?
You're developing the standards, so everybody starts the ball game on the same rule.
Agreement.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's
I just didn't
rules.
Know if it meant like, oh, we have some program that we actually do.
That feeds into it.
And I think 8 just is really interesting. Make North Bend pedestrian friendly, bicycle friendly, transit friendly, but also recognizing that we, live and work far away and, the role of the automobile for transportation needs. So I just wondered how this would conflict with some of the, because it, to me that says, oh, people are going to have lots of cars.
I look at it as more of a 360 usage, right? So you've got all these different people that will be using this space, so
mm-hmm.
you should probably keep that in mind instead of trying to rule this out over that or rule this one out over that. I see it more as a, these are all the pieces that got to be factored in.
Yeah.
I think it says screw the automobile.
It does, yes. But then it's like, yeah, okay.
But
I was being very picky, but...
Remember, you're dealing with the design standards, so what this is trying to set up is a context that you're designing not only for the home, the design of the homes and people, but also to accommodate the needs that serve
yeah.
those, which
the
is the vehicle.
Community.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else on page three?
Thorough reading.
Yeah.
Hmm?
I said I love the thorough reading.
Oh, I was reading away today, I'll tell you.
Okay. I'm over on four.
Page 4?
We are on page 4.
We're
moving. Page 13, I just reworded that for my health, safety, and welfare of the public. I felt like it read better.
It did. Thank you for that.
And then, let's see. we've removed the following introductory section because it's changed. It's changed to the design standards and guidelines are broken down into commercial, mixed-use industrial, single-family, cottage, and multifamily. For the sake of brevity, we just took that out. We just start with D. Okay, anything else on page four?
So A, the standards acquaint property owners and developers with concerns that the community has identified in planning crosswalks about the built and natural environment. That sentence.
Yeah.
As reflecting back to that vision document, mm-hmm. where the community had expressed certain desires about the community being
more. Where'd that? Just makes it sound scary. Like, oh my God.
That's
maybe
what
that's why I'm right. So, like, critically, I'm like, I'm concerned.
Yeah, concerned. And she's yeah, talking in a negative.
Stuff
like, wow.
How about we use goals? Because
yes, sounds so
we're
much
gonna,
better.
We're going to speak to the positive. This is good.
Positive, yes.
We use anxieties.
Huh? Or anxiety.
Okay, you guys are killing me. Anything else
sorry,
on four?
Sorry, I have nothing else.
I'll
I don't have
make
anything
it.
For a long time.
I'm sorry I even went down this path.
Sorry.
Remember, there's 34 pages.
30, okay, down to 30.
Five?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, we are down.
I don't think I have anything on page 14.
Page five, anybody?
Did they warn you about how much fun we were?
I don't really
know.
Oh, we have.
Public. In public sector, do we have any more recent or additional examples that we might want to cite besides the improvements on North End? I'm on 2A, public sector development ends with one example, streetscape improvements along North Bend Way, which aren't very far along.
Do we have to give
fire
an example?
Station. I don't know if the fire
if
station...
If they move downtown, the improvements along North Bend Way heading east.
Well, the North Bend Way improvements are about to happen, so that'll be current. And
there you go. And I was thinking about the visitor center that's going to go on the other block, which is not there yet either. But, if you're looking for built examples. But anyway, that was
do we need that language
just all
in
the
there?
Curve.
Because it'll... Where are we?
Or you
we're
can,
on
you can just
strike
that last
let's
sentence
just,
altogether.
Yeah, because it'll become irrelevant one day, right?
We don't need an example.
No,
what's the timeline of all those
buttons? Yeah, you're in a big
That's not on
sorry.
Right
topic.
Got it.
You asked later.
Okay. So we can provide examples in our...
Is that a quick answer?
Okay. Okay, anything else on five?
I'll go personal privilege on you, man.
Six.
Okay. We've added in cottage under A1 to make that distinction. Anything else on page six? Okay. Page seven, we are under...
Before you go down to where you edited, B3.
Uh-huh.
When I read the opening sentence... I wasn't sure. It said the construction or renovation of one single-family dwelling, parents, except accessory dwelling units, closed parents.
That so doesn't make sense.
In part, it's an exception to the exceptions, I assume, but...
An exception to an exception would mean it would apply.
It would apply, and so I'm wondering if what was intended was... Yeah, it didn't make sense to me. I thought we were that it was this number three was trying to talk about renovation, but I don't know. Something didn't work there.
I would just suggest we rewrite that construction renovation of one single family dwelling or attendance accessory dwelling unit.
Well, I guess my question was staff's intent, or you guys didn't write this one, but was the intent that we would apply a design standard on an accessory dwelling unit? It didn't seem likely. So the parents didn't make sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
You so guys maybe just take that.
Figure it out.
Yeah, we'll
get it.
Okay.
Stupid question number six. What would be an in-kind maintenance and or repair only?
In-kind.
What does that mean?
That
means that your neighbor comes over and helps you out.
Yes.
It's like a
it's
donation.
It's not an improvement. It's not a downgrade. It's the same quality, I would think.
Well, is the intent that it's not driven by permit? Is that what this is trying to get at?
I mean, no, I think we can get rid of the word in kind.
What Terry's talking about is that it's a maintaining what's already house. There.
Yeah.
Right.
So if it's in the same theme, the same vibe, or whatever other word you want to use, as long as it's keeping that, you're good.
So what's in kind got to do with it?
I wouldn't think
it's just that. It's not about dollars.
We are going to delete that word because we're debating this. Because this is supposed to provide...
This is supposed to be the easy way.
We're going to delete in kind.
That's your kind. It's a loophole.
Maintenance and repair. Okay. Okay. Seven. Or eight. Okay, so everything that you see crossed out on item eight has just been simplified to say manufactured home design is regulated under table eight. It's another part of the code, and those are exempt. Go ahead.
Is number 10, is it intended to be four lots or units, single family developments or units under four lots?
Using the language units is confusing, I think. But in the rest of the code, it does read that way, saying units and or lots.
Yeah, I think the unit part is when you have cottages that are on a... like a binding on common ground, but
well, that's so you could have, yeah, I can have four units on one lot.
Mm-hmm.
I could have four lots.
So in theory, what we're saying is,
and one unit built across it.
Yeah, right? If you have one lot and five units, it's, mm-hmm. it triggers, like the cottage situation.
Right.
You could just say single family developments of four units or less. Does that work?
That works.
Yes.
Okay.
Developments. Okay. And then a single standalone multifamily unit would also not apply. And those are all as
yep.
they are right now. They're just, we just added them in
because
yep. they weren't there.
Eight.
Okay. Page 8, we crossed out C, part of C, because it was excess. We've underlined standards and guidelines to point out standards or regulations and guidelines or suggestions. There's been some spelling additions. Anything else on page 8? Mm-hmm. Okay. 18A under procedures, that's also... superfluous language that we've cut out. Are we okay with that?
Where's it referenced?
I'm just curious, sorry. On page 9, if it's a, we're no longer requiring a mandatory pre-application meeting with
We do. That all is in another section of our code entirely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I checked it just if we...
So in another section of this?
No. Different chapter, chapter 20.
Okay, so should there be a reference here to them to chapter 20? Just so
I don't even think it's necessary because a pre-application is just required for any development,
okay.
regardless of whether it has design review or not.
This is redundant. But what we can do in the future is have a little comment that says redundant language, not necessary, just so you guys know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, page 10. Okay. Okay. Most of this language is also duplicated. From chapter 20.004, right, Mike?
So if everything there is being struck, do you need the sentence above the first strike?
That's a good
it doesn't
point.
Seem to be going anywhere.
No, it's just that should be cut out, too.
What's on the next page?
Let's see.
So we eliminated the types.
A bunch of
mm-hmm.
10
exist?
More words.
No, they do. They're really in another section of the code.
The problem when you have redundant language
overlays,
is,
yeah.
well, one section's open, you amend it, and you immediately create a conflict because you can't amend another section without a big process.
Yeah.
I love that. Less press to read in the future.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, could you get this down to like 15 bullet points?
Wouldn't
that
be great?
Yeah.
That comes
in.
Make it. All right, 11.
Okay. So what you see at the top is just continued from page 10. Okay, so what you see under B, this is what we require of anybody coming in to show us in their pre-application review meetings anyways. We just added in for clarity. Written descriptions, scaled elevation plans, and site plans, architectural drawings, renderings, and or graphics, and material and color samples as necessary. Is that everybody
so,
okay with that?
So should the so in that that you're trying to get at, under the idea of what's required versus suggested, mm-hmm. instead of responsible, should this be required?
I don't know if we necessarily want to require everything.
Yeah, it's are going to depend on the context. Like a single family home isn't necessarily going to have to provide the color and material samples and so forth as long as we've got that.
Okay. Okay.
I think there needs to be some, allow for some wiggle room there. Is everybody okay with that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we're going to move on to the single family and cottage residential sections, which Jenna has something to chime in on with that. And we have an additional...
I'm chiming in on page 13.
Oh, you are. Okay. I have a note here.
Well, then I'll chime in on 11 there at the bottom. So there is the comment about council has mm-hmm. in front of them an amendment on cottage. Right? Is that what
yes.
that's
yes.
Uh-huh. That's the thing that we did a while ago, isn't yes. it?
Going to council.
Okay, I will chime in now. Okay, so you guys recall that there was this question of whether standard size homes were allowed in the cottage zone. We brought the council put forth a interim regulation and threw it back to you guys mm-hmm. to kind of determine. You guys took a look at the cottage standards and basically confirmed. You didn't make any real edits to the standards, but you also confirmed that, as written, standardized single family wouldn't was not the intent. It was kind of questionably allowed through P&D. Where we are now, then we took your recommendation to the council committee who reviewed it, and through their review, they dove pretty far into the whole question of the percentages of size. So if you recall, the design standards or the performance standards for cottage required a certain percentage to be under 1,200. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they started really evaluating that, and that process actually started last March. It took multiple meetings for them to come forth with a recommendation to the full council. And what that recommendation basically does is it adjusts the percentages. So we kind of took the percentages out. But the concern was, well, how are we going to ensure that we still get the small houses? So what, and I don't have it in front of me, but what, and I will include it, I'll send it to you guys as kind of FYI as it goes to the council. But what it has done is it now says basically, cottage house is anything under 1,700 square feet. Okay, we allow in any development a 10% allowance to go above that, subject to building a house that's under 1,300 square feet. So, if you think about this, so for every house. So first of all, you get 10% of the subdivision can be a larger house. And that's actually a good thing. That's providing a mix in a neighborhood versus a bunch of small cookie cutters.
Yep.
So good thing number one. Then what we did is, well, how can we incentivize small houses? So what we've done and how to do that is to make them economically viable. So basically we've said, okay, developer, we'll allow you one more larger home, but that larger home can't, there's parameters, it can't exceed 2,500 square feet. Subject to, you have to build one under 1,300. Mm-hmm. So if they want to go to 11% of the homes, you know, add another home. So go to 11 homes if they
over.
Yeah, they would actually. The only way they can do that is to actually provide of the whole development.
So if there was 100.
So if there's 100
homes, 10 that are big and 10 that have to be under 1,300.
You get 10 free.
You get 10
as part 10 of free. Providing a mix of housing types.
It's not a one for one.
No, but that also helps offset what is being argued as the reason why these houses aren't being built. Anything in that 1,500, 1,600 square foot doesn't really pencil.
Okay.
So what we're saying is, okay, we'll allow you some flexibility with some larger ones to help to pencil the smaller ones up to 10%. Then you're done. Then you have to build under 1,700. Unless, if you want to have another large house, great, but you have to provide that real small house for the empty nester or the single person or what have you.
So you can have a 2,000, but you have to supplement it with a 1,300.
Yes.
2,000 or 2,400.
Well, something over 17.
Something over
17. So 17 to 2,500.
Something under 13.
Now, the good thing about that is it ends up providing a mix of housing. It actually potentially will yield the smaller houses in a way that hopefully will allow it to pencil for developers. Mm-hmm. And ironically, what we have had is a couple of developers paying attention to the council committee, coming to the council committee's meetings. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we've hit a sweet spot nice. With that. So that's where we are. So now back to where what we're doing here today. You have input or one?
Well, I was just going to share a lot of that focus was looking at the larger blocks of land where there would be significant amount of houses built. Right? That's what the committee was really looking at, versus... Mm-hmm. 4 or 6 units, mm-hmm. right? So it was looking at where you're going to have 50 mm-hmm. or more houses, and what Jenna's saying, 50 all small houses wasn't not only where they were being told it wouldn't pencil, it were also started feeling like that wasn't what the intent was.
And
was there any thought about limiting the size that cottage development could consume? Just to prevent such a cluster of small houses?
The orange zoning color is your cottage zone.
No, they said, a maximum 20 acres out of any area or something, whatever it would be. But they just limited in acreage size so you didn't have so many small houses gathered versus... but that goes back to that discussion we had where it was an incentive for the builders to... do that. So I think of cottage housing was traditional as infill for leftover lots inside a city, areas of sensitive nature along waterfronts, right? We're trying to commingle small homes with big homes in a nicer way. Is that the intent?
Well, I mean, traditionally your older neighborhoods did commingle types of housings. And
was this just a benefit that came out of that?
I
didn't tease out that the intent was to have a big, small mix.
No. The original intent of the cottage was to provide a smaller housing type, a more affordable. It also said one of the express intents was a mix of housing, but that was a mix of multifamily and cottage. So what we've basically done is add a third mix, limit it to, we're looking at the largest subdivision we think we're going to have in that cottage zone is between 40 and 60. So a 40, the one that we're looking at now is 40. So 10% would be 4 homes of the 40. If they want to go above that, they got to provide that 1,300 square foot home. So in the end, it's not the allowance. Yeah.
There was also a question just in stepping away from the, the additive effect. In the mix, did any language get added in to help define what a mix meant in sizes?
Yes.
Because one of the comments was, if cottage is defined by being 1,700 or smaller, I can build 40 1,700 square foot homes.
I'm going to have to go back and look at that, but I want to say we added 500 square feet is a different size, but I might be thinking lot size, too. So let me look at that.
No, there was
we
a comment
that, yeah.
in there. Yes, there was something of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the trigger was.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, if you're building 1,700 square foot homes and you build one 1,300 feet, is the lot size still the same, or can that be adjusted?
No, we required the larger homes have to be on the larger lots.
So if you built a 1,300 square foot home, then you could be on a smaller.
Yes. Yeah. So coming back to where we are today, what I did, and I've been kind of mainly working with the council committee on that. So then I did leave on vacation while these guys were finishing this project up. So on page 13, what I have done, there's one for you guys, if you want to pass those around. I have added in red, my red lines basically added language that would keep this chapter consistent with the language that is in the current cottage.
Yeah.
Okay. Megan just noticed we didn't talk about 12. Did you guys have page 12? Did you have
all questions on 12?
I'm good.
That's all. Attention for 13.
You know, Brendan, we agree with that. One thing we were trying to do is not inundate with massive amounts of change. That's part of the you know, because you guys are doing this on your volunteer time. So we're trying to find that sweet spot where we agree with you. Anything coming out of new language, we're going to keep bullet point.
Nice.
And even since we've, like, talked about the preamble, I think we're even going to nail it down a little more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the cottage housing piece.
Okay.
I don't want to get off track of the focus here, but it's striking me, like, am I missing it? I feel like we kind of went through and basically created, developed, whatever, the cottage housing zone. How many years ago? Two? Something like that?
No, it was...
Created the zones?
The zone was...
Oh, the city, before this map became what it is today, we went through and talked about it and kind of crafted that outline of what cottage housing. And now that it's supposedly developers, planners coming in saying, hey, this is not working, this is not penciling, it's not us coming up with the change, it's city council's slope. Subgroup of the city council, and that pisses me off. So I'm just leaving it out there. I would refer back to them and say, if there's further dialogue about it, let's have a conversation here, and then we'll go back to city council and make our recommendation instead of them working around it on their own.
I don't think that's
asking us to think through after the fact.
I don't the process that came about with this one is. We recognized the problem because we had a developer that came in and wanted to build standard-sized homes through a P&D. And through a P&D, you could have there was an argument that that was allowed. So we said to the council, hey, now we don't think this was your intent. There's an unclear portion of your code that could leave this kind of out there as a potential problem. So they then went and put the interim regulation in place, kicked it back to you guys and said, hey, what's your... they clearly said, hey, we want to maintain the cottage zone for cottage houses. Their expressed intent to you was we don't want to see a lot of change in the realm of all of a sudden we're not asking for large homes and what have you. You guys concurred with that. Then when they got the Planning Commission recommendation, which was just concurring with their original recommendation, they dialed into a lot more of the questions, which is part of what that committee's job is to do, is to take your recommendation, evaluate it, and potentially provide further input to the council as a whole. So when the council gets the full packet, they get your recommendation, they get where the recommendation was with Planning Commission, how it evolved through the CED committee process. And then we're actually scheduling a public hearing because of the amount of change at the March 4th council meeting. So we did talk about whether it was necessary to go back to the Planning Commission for your evaluation of their changes. And it's not part of the legal process.
Sure.
As we were looking at all the things on the plate and the fact that we're going to have a public hearing to get more public comment, the decision was to just have their committee recommendation move forward to the council.
So, just generally speaking, the size of the development, I appreciate the zone size, but any given developer could come in and apply for how many lots do they need to consider in this? Is there some minimum, maximum?
That's based just on the zoning, so they can do up to 10 units per acre. So depending on the lot.
So let's assume somewhere near that, developer comes in, makes an application inside the cottage zoning, he starts down the road, he builds a 2,500 square foot house, he's got a plan for a 1,300 square foot house, he does all the math, he's got it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
You basically created a microcosm of he can build to whatever the market will bear, and it'll take him years to get through that plat, because he's not going to build something that he can't sell. That's crazy. Instead of having a development, a plat the guy's going to build consistent homes on, now you've got a huge, broad range of things that he can build in there, depending on not just square footage, construction quality, a whole bunch of dances goes on, and that plat will take forever to finish.
I think we talked about that night, too, when we went through
this. That's a major mistake, in my opinion.
The allowance to have, I'm not following why you think that would make it take longer.
If you take, I'll just use 10 lots,
yeah,
for example, and the developer is saying, okay, I'm going to develop my streets, do my infrastructure, and I'm going to build. When I get ready to start building, I'm going to do market analysis to figure out where am I going to get my money back. He's going to build to that. If he's not going to get his money back by building a 1,300 square foot house today,
do it later.
No,
yeah.
You're just saying those lots may lay fallow.
Right, okay, yeah.
Okay.
You created a real problem. It's going
so
to
they're
be
gonna have
potentially dead neighborhood with vacant lots in it.
With a bunch of, like,
small parks.
A bunch of big houses, a few minimal of the medium size, and then nothing else. Yeah.
Well, let me pound it out, because there's ways to combat
that.
That's
a good point.
Good point.
I feel the same. I feel like, you know, I take a lot of my free time to go through this, and we have a lot of somewhat warm, heated debate and conversation about stuff, and I've gone to city council meetings, and what I hear there is not at all what we talked about, and that's really frustrating. I'll just put that out there, too. It's very frustrating.
And they're not here tonight.
They're never here.
Again.
That one I'll take it. So on that comment,
I think I digress.
Well, no, but it, but to that though, let me make sure that I'm sharing. As you know, I've been attending pretty frequently the council committees and listening to their deliberations and providing feedback that you guys have given when asked. Being a new year, there is a new the council committees were reformed, so
mm-hmm.
two of the three members on the current committee are new. Within that, in their first meeting, I ask, Council Member Cook is the new chair of that committee, and I ask him specifically, was he going to attend our planning commission meetings from time to time? And what I got from really all three was essentially saying, you let us know when you think it's important for council representation, and one of us will be there. So
every time.
That has been offered, and so I wasn't anticipating that for this evening, so I didn't make that ask myself. But feel free to any time that you're thinking that we need to get that input, make sure it's known.
I'll just take a second and say this is coming up. Probably every third or fourth time we get together, something like this piece.
Yeah.
And I get the idea, the liaison, and you guys do a set of the meetings where you tell us this is what happened to the meeting. And I also get the, quote, political piece of it where these guys are up there, gals are up here, they do their thing. But, man, talk about an incredible waste of time.
Well, I think right now, I think we're worried a little bit about a concern that I don't necessarily feel you need to be concerned with. You know, when it comes to the streets, one of the council members had a concern, brought it to the committee. The committee requested it go back to planning commission out of respect to get your input. Okay, that was, I mean, that's part of the process, but that was one of their main concerns is, well, what does the planning commission think? Okay. So they didn't ask you to just, you know,
right. They did, yeah,
rubber stamp what they want, but they told you what their position was because it was getting kicked back to you for your input. So that's just how the process works. So now it's your chance to provide that recommendation. The cottage, they evaluated the standards. There was a few of them that on the committee that have been working on the cottage standards from their inception. Jonathan Rosen has been part of the development of that in an effort to provide some type of affordable housing through, since I think they actually were adopted in 2007 originally. So there was a lot of interest in that topic as we talked about it at committee, and there was never an intent to bypass the Planning Commission. In fact,
I don't think it's a face to try to bypass. I just think the sense of it, not just me, I think it's the first time I've really felt it, it's just right now with this cottage housing topic. But it keeps coming up. So I don't know what the fix is, but it's a sense that we come here and do what we do, and do what we do before we get here. We make our recommendation, and it's as if it starts from scratch when it gets to City Council. It's like, and they're not here to see what we do in the first place. So,
well, what we can do better for you is to clearly, sometimes in council, we've dealt with a topic. By the time it gets to the council, we've given the presentation like 15 times.
Sure.
So, but what we can do then is clearly step back and say we want to articulate the Planning Commission's recommendation first. Then we're how CED affected it, and now, Council, please make your final.
Yeah, Rob's actually been really helpful coming to a couple of the Planning Commission or Council meetings to articulate the Planning Commission's recommendation on something before, and I think the Council's appreciated that.
Cheers, Rob. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, he has done a great job.
Because we're kind of caught there, I'll take it one step further on this cottage piece. There were several discussions around that what Jenna was sharing is, should this go back through Planning Commission or not? And I think the committee was making a reasonable choice in saying, we feel that the changes that we're recommending here are in keeping with what the Planning Commission's philosophy has been, and for time's sake, because we've been talking about this for a year, we think we should go forward. But Jim, I hear you. I was concerned about that. Exactly what's gotten expressed tonight is what I was concerned the feeling would be. So, I get that. I also understand why they chose to take the route they did.
If I can also add, the dynamics of a large land mass inside the city limits that has any zone is going to run into the developer's wishes, the logic that fits on the overlay of that, and some interest in trying to accommodate. If it were up to me, and I'll just say this, I would shrink the zoning and let the developer build to the market in a different location. Maybe it used to be called kind of zoning, not manipulate what we created as a zone.
Yep.
That's what's bugging me big time. Because it's kind of like, I know it says commercial, but I kind of want to build a couple of apartments. If I can convince you with the logic, can I just swing around and change the zoning? That's the problem.
Right. It could be. Or you could actually have created a, because what you don't want to create is a bunch of cookie-cutter neighborhoods with all the same homes, all the same facades. And the more mix that you provide, which the problem with the zone before is it, from a planning having diversified neighborhood standpoint, is it didn't do that. This allows different income levels to live in the same area, ages, size of families. This allows for a real mix of a community, which is what older communities like downtown North Bend is basically designed around versus suburban newer development. So I think you have the opportunity to look at the zoning through the comp plan amendment. That process was not what we were doing anyway. But you will have that opportunity in year 2014 and 15. So but you know what, I think we can probably move on from this conversation. The point I took though is there's a sense that we definitely need to have that communication between the council and the Planning Commission, and your recommendations clearly articulated.
Yeah. I think on Jim's point, if I can just say that I saw it more as why was the discussion being held there instead of here where we could talk about it at the Planning Commission and then go to council with that information.
Well, it's a significant change about it. It's an entire zone you're talking about, mm-hmm. not a particular project of 50 homes. Mm-hmm. That's, I don't know, is that the 16th of our land?
I don't know.
What it is, it's a big number.
It's a big chunk.
Big chunk. In the city center area, between the one side or the other. And I just, it strikes me that we're just playing it with it and not making it a cottage zone. We're making it something unique. There you go.
Page 13.
So, Diana, what were you trying to...
Anyway, all we did on page 13 is... Actually, everything on page 13 was part of the original cottage standards and then not still part of the cottage standards. They haven't changed. The requirement of the porch and the requirement of the pitched roof. So basically what I added here is just not since you'll see this section of the code under B, building entries, required a 5 foot width and depth for a 5 foot depth for the porch. Cottage actually was 6. We're making those consistent. So single family homes and cottage will have a 6 foot depth.
And the only real difference then between is that in single family it's only a 70% and all
yes.
cottages require.
Right. And then the cottage roof pitch, we have that requirement on the cottage roof pitch just because they are smaller homes, and that gives a more craftsman, smaller home approach. So that was the only edit, just to make those consistent. Back to me.
So item C, yard spaces and balconies, is left blank. Is it necessary to have that in there?
Yeah, usually, right? Because you want to have some reference to the blank section. Are you talking about the section or just the...
We have...
Did you see the blank stare?
This area left blank on purpose. I like
that's
that.
Right. I get that.
You're saying just strike it. Right?
Just strike the blank section. Area.
There's a reason for it.
Some porches, I would assume a porch... Well, is a porch going to be covered by a balcony or...
It's there is because we have the same section in multifamily, so to keep it consistent with having our subsections the same, that's why it's left blanking. Also, if we ever want to add.
So we don't have anything specific around yard space then for cottage homes?
Well, we could add the requirement for the one tree. Yeah. We will add something.
Let's not add something just to have something. You
no,
know?
We actually
you
have a requirement
yard space
for
is a common space, I've yeah. found in most cottage areas.
And that's why where I'm eventually going is if we have so many small homes that have smaller lots, then where is the space requirement based on that?
So we're in design standards. You're looking more at site planning. That part of it is in the plan neighborhood development section of the code, which requires X amount of square foot per home.
Well, how about we just reference that section of the code under C here?
That would be great.
That's a great idea.
C.
So it's not
blank. Striking left blank and inserting C.
whatever it is.
The only problem with referencing things, just so we're all aware, is when and it does change. If you don't catch the other changes, like your code. So it's always caught from our standpoint. It's not necessary, but. We'll figure something out here. So it's
well,
not
the safer thing to do is to not cite the section, just cite the.
The name.
The name.
Yeah. Good point.
Then you have search. But
name. Okay.
We'll call it something.
Okay. 14? Anybody for 14? And anybody want to talk about when you want to wrap up or how many edits we've got?
How far are we going to go?
Yeah. Well, we got.
We have a lot of pages.
Four pages.
Yeah.
So let me pause and ask this. We've gone some pretty detailed edits through. I think it's doing a nice job of kind of telling us of what's been designed here. Do you have a fair number of comments continuing on?
I only have, I think, one other one.
Okay. Let me then go this way to Megan and say, Megan, instead of leading us through one by one, can you maybe back it up a level of height and just kind of give us what's the significant things that you've been doing through the sections? Then we'll pause when we get to the question.
The hardest part is the next 10 pages, and after that, it's fast.
It's just fast.
So it's just.
Okay.
Well, I have something on page 14.
Oh, I see there. Okay. All right, 14. Okay.
It's the one thing. Right, there might be one other thing that I just need to look at.
You only said one.
So, page 14, I'm going to painfully mention the siding materials number 2, because this we did talk about in length, in great depth, a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago.
I remember.
And our recommendation from Planning Commission when this was in was not to ban it, mm-hmm. and then it got banned when it went to City Council. Mm-hmm. So just wondering, can we change it again? Because it really bugs me. It just bugs the crap out of me that we're banning it. So my recommendation is to do something similar to what number 3 it does, where we don't necessarily ban something, but we say that vinyl siding can be utilized in limited fashion, maybe accent fashion is maybe not the right word, but not in widespread application.
Well, if the City Council struck it.
Well, it was, I mean, I even the night.
What's the, I mean, if it's harmful to the environment, we set our.
It's debatable.
It came, well, and it went to the city, it went through the proper channels and it came back this way. So the process.
I'm not sure that's how it actually happened.
That's my takeaway from it. But,
yeah, that's.
I didn't even recall it.
They did approve having no vinyl siding for a number of reasons.
Right. So with that being the proper process, I don't know if it's appropriate for us to now try to, shift some words around to kind of get intent back in there.
Yeah, so what I would see is that would be so at the proper time when we're taking this document up for passage, mm-hmm. that would be the point to offer an amendment, and we'll see where it ends.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
15?
Okay. This is all pretty much unnecessary language that we've cut down, or it's duplicated.
16.
And this is my last one, just building orientation, front door shall face the street or common open space area. So maybe I'm answering my question, just how does that impact cottages? Because not in some cottage design, you may not necessarily put that front door facing the open space. Or is that covered?
Well,
yeah.
Some kind of pathway.
You would have it on the open space or a street, for sure. That's what we're.
One I think staff's stronger points is in that is that is the belief that the front door should face versus a side yard. Right, so,
I think just naturally, I haven't seen any cottage developments. I'm trying to think of any that where you don't have the front door opening up onto a common open space. Yeah. Or the street. This really combats, there's one example actually in Snoqualmie Ridge where they actually put the door on the side so because of the narrow lot widths.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're dealing with narrow homes, you want to make sure your code enables the pedestrian elements of the home to be the view from.
Okay.
So that's why that's
all right.
So.
Yep, so I'm good.
Anything else on page 16? Okay. Lot bulk and dimensional variation. I think we just reworded it. I reworded it for clarity and bumped it out to 1 and 2. I need to fix some spelling in there. but other than that, that's the end of single family and cottage, and we're going to move on to multifamily. That's okay. Do we have time for that?
You're catching the 1 versus on. Things like that when you're saying spelling.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
point, 18.
Okay, so we have a handout for this, actually. We want you to look at, we've made some additions. So it'll be simpler.
This is just an intro, so what we could do is introduce it.
Yep.
Let's just, you guys have 10 minutes left in you?
Mm-hmm. You want to pass the pictures out as well? Let's hold on, and then we'll do the pictures with the...
Okay.
All the
barista.
Oh.
And we bring
it back.
What did
she
do here?
Or do you want? Exactly. Summarize away. What do you want us to go away with?
Okay. Let's see.
Well, she's looking real quick. Why we brought this to you and the whole purpose of this topic coming forth is the fact that we right now have great design standards for commercial, we're at single family, but we didn't have it for multi. So this beefs up your multifamily standards, so you get that high level of design that you have in the rest of the city.
Okay. So we definitely don't want to go through this line by line tonight.
No.
Are these based on anywhere of reference or?
Mm-hmm. Yes. All the new, the red and underlined is being based off Snoqualmie Ridge and what they have. And we have some pictures that we can show you at a later time. It's basically what the end product would somewhat look like.
Should we have those or no?
DOA.
I know. Yeah, exactly. The one thing, if you, between now and your next meeting, when you are, and we did look at other design standards, but the one thing that we found about the experience on Snoqualmie Ridge is the multifamily that's in that development center, or neighborhood center area, actually did yield a pretty nice design, and it wasn't too onerous. And that is the key, is how can you get that good design without creating this difficult process? So
can you send us out that well. Address so we can drive it?
Sure.
You're talking office center?
Office, the kind of two blocks on both sides of center. We'll send you to a few of the ones that we think worked out pretty well.
That'd be helpful, thanks.
And they met these standards.
Did you mean to send those photos around or no?
We'll send them out when we bring back, because what we're going to do is maybe implement some pictures into this document next time around.
So that takes us through 25.
No words.
No words.
Okay, so building entries, that's our first main addition.
Which page, I'm sorry?
Which is B. 18. Yeah, page 18, B, building entries. We've taken out some language and we've added all exterior doorways shall be trimmed with visible architectural detail with a total minimum width of 3.5 inches. We've also added exterior stairs facing the primary circulation routes must be designated to blend with the structure. A maximum of one flight of stairs per building may be located on the side of the building facing the street. In no cases shall exterior stairs project more than 5 feet from the face of the building, nor shall the risers of the projecting portion of the stairs be visible from the street. So basically what that's saying, it's going to prevent having your stairs jutting out at various sections into a parking lot.
Or the North Bend apartments. Or the Mount Si apartments on North Broadway. That's kind of the thing that was trying to.
Yeah, I know that.
It forces any staircase more than one flight to be built within the structure.
Yeah.
So this is a good example of that.
Okay.
Of what to do or not to do.
Of what to do.
So there's stairwells.
Well, that would be allowed. That's not necessarily a what to do, but you can see that the staircase is at a scale that doesn't look.
Well, I'd say that staircase that looks better than it would probably look if you forced that staircase inside the building.
Right.
Character-wise.
And that's why this is requiring the larger staircases to be integrated.
Trying to catch the building on fire.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we've got trim, wider trim on the doorways. We've got stairs covered. Roof type. Continuous roof line shall be articulated with dormers, significant gables, or ridge line offsets a minimum of 2 feet every 50 linear feet. So this prevents the roof from just going straight. We've got some roof lines. If you want the next roof. We also talk about the roof pitch, building eaves. Let's see. We talk about 6 to 12 pitch, 24 inch depth. I'm going really quickly. And then we talk about how to ensure that any equipment on the roof is visually unobtrusive. So we want to make sure that those air conditioning units aren't sticking out on the roof. You can't see them from the street.
What if they have solar panels? Is that part of what would be required here? So you couldn't have panels on?
Are we speaking to solar anywhere?
No, but this is more like built-in features like roof stacks. There's a lot of times you can commingle.
But that might be a good thing to add, except for solar panels.
Yeah, because that one development that you took everybody to.
Well, there's nothing that says it's required. It's just ensure that they're...
Well, what you might want to look at, Megan, I know that I listened in on a couple of webinars specifically around rooftop solar that PAW has been working on, and I think up in Snohomish County, and it might have been Edmonds, might have been the city that was working on it, but they were working on a model ordinance for cities, so you might want to...
Okay.
And I'm sure Seattle was in on it.
Okay, we'll look at that. Okay. Window types. We've added in that a minimum of 20% of the front of the facade shall be glazed. This is required at Snoqualmie Ridge currently. All windows shall be trimmed, again, on all sides. Right now, we don't have it on either side of the house, 3.5 inches. Building color. We took that out. Are y'all okay?
No, we're good.
Going?
We're on a different topic.
What has to be glazed?
No, why can't they have, like, more architectural pleasing? I'm not going back to our last meeting.
I thought you wanted jelly.
Wine bottles,
I mean, something architectural.
Right, she's trying to be serious.
Yeah. I'm trying to just get a stir. Are we okay with that? Are we good with that?
So I think what you're mainly hearing is we all need time to read through that section more in depth, and then we would understand it and have questions.
Okay. Well, maybe we could do, since this is an intro.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you feel like we're at a point where I think I'm getting the vibe that we're at a point where we can still publish the notice for the public hearing, which is scheduled when, guys? When's our
next meeting?
Oh, so we've already noticed it. All right.
So it's already noticed. So Yeah, so exactly that. So we can get public feedback. We'll have had another 2 weeks to absorb the depth of this document, and then based on the public hearing and where we're feeling, we'll know whether we're going to wrap or go another meeting.
Yeah.
This is definitely too much to absorb tonight.
Okay. And on that note, we talked about this today too. Your schedule that we have is very flexible. We're at the most aggressive version of it, and just so you know, what we're going to do is keep amending that so it's clearly a working schedule, because there's no way we're going to get through what we put on that.
So that means in another way, since you're already begging for mercy.
No, I just can see it.
They want it.
Okay. So, commissioners, are you guys there? Well, that's up to you guys.
I think I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Megan,
one more announcement. We do have an open planning commission's position, so if anybody knows somebody that would not be a good fit, please let us know. So
Where are we in the dynamics of residents versus out of the area?
There must be a resident.
Good. Anything else for the good of the order?
I have two questions.
Okay.
Status of tattoo parlor stuff. Is that coming back to us?
That's all over.
I heard it was not done.
No, it's done. And that was a long process with many different. So the last.
But council. Well, let's cut to the chase. Council did pass a modification that allowed tattoo in certain sections of DC.
Oh.
That's where it landed.
Oh, okay.
So yeah.
All right, and then marijuana one. Is that one? That's the one we did last time.
It's coming back to you.
So it comes back with
where's
the public hearing, too.
Right? Well, no, there was some information.
We're going to bring it back to you guys next meeting on the 27th to continue the discussion, and then it will go to public
okay.
hearing
all right.
with us. Yeah. So there's a little more time on that.
So we got public hearing on two items at the same time in the next month.
You do have two public hearings next meeting, right?
Yeah, you'll have a public hearing on the street standards and then on this.
Right. But not on marijuana. Not next time.
That should be like bonds over.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just Megan, just remember though for that marijuana standard, we have the same standards here as the council committee in expectations. You'll figure that out. Anything else? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're done. Kill that paper.